On this week's edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we talk about the year of golf in 2017, the highs, the lows, the biggest surprises, and what we'll remember most from the past 12 months. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Ryan Harrington, deputy editor of golfdigest.com. Has it really been nearly 12 months since we saw Justin Thomas walking off the 18th green, victorious at the Kapalua Resort? Where does the time go? We blink and suddenly 2017 is just about in the books. From a golf standpoint, the year had a number of memorable moments, from Thomas's breakout season that included his first major title and a PGA Tour Player of the Year honors, to Lexi Thompson's heartbreak at the ANA Inspiration, to Jordan Spieth's wild win at the Open Championship, to Tiger Woods, and on and on and on. Anyway, you get the idea. Lots of things to break down. And joining me to make sense of this year are my three colleagues from Golf Digest. Sam Weinman, how you doing?
Hi, Ryan. How are you?
Good. Joel Beal, how are you?
What's going on?
And Keely Levins. Keely?
Hey, what's going on?
Not too much. Folks, let's just start with a simple question. Was the 2017 season a memorable year in golf? Sam, what do you think?
I think you add all those things up, for sure. I mean, it's definitely, I remember covering a few years in golf where there was not one memorable major championship, and that's usually how you define the seasons. And I think all of them had some sort of larger than the year storyline. Sergio winning, certainly Koepka maybe to a lesser extent, but certainly the Spieth win and Thomas's wins were all moments that might end up defining their respective careers. So from that standpoint, it was a big year, and then you throw in a few other kind of bold-faced moments, and I thought it was a great year. A lot of different storylines, a lot of interesting things for us from a golf interest standpoint. So I was constantly entertained.
Very good. Keely, Joel, difference in opinion, or are you agree with Sam?
No, it's not only did every major bring it this year, but that you had, the Dustin Johnson narrative of, winning three times before the Masters, and then obviously what transpired at Augusta that week. Someone like Hideki Matsuyama, who started off the winter really strong and had a bunch of near misses. It's interesting that he was right there in the Player of the Year contention at the end, until Justin Thomas really locked it up. You had the emergence of John Rahm, and at the end, Xander Schauffele. So you had all these different things going on top of the Lexi Thompson incident really kind of shone a different light on the rules, which is something we thought was kind of in the past. So luckily, or we were lucky if we have one or two of these narratives in a golf campaign. There were seven or eight this year.
Yeah, I think Sam makes a good point that we usually end up defining a year by the majors, and we didn't even need the majors storylines to make this a memorable year. I mean, so many things outside of majors were happening. And like you said, even the women's majors had some really big moments, like the infamous ANA penalty. And then, you had a sitting president arrive at the Women's US Open. Like, there were just these moments that just stick out that I think people are definitely going to remember for a long time.
I mean, if we're all in agreement then that there were a lot of moments, is there something in particular in your mind, Sam, that that really carried this year? Is there a theme from the year that you take away, or is there an individual thing that, say, 10 years down the road, you're still going to remember this from 2017?
Well, I think the thing that we've talked a lot about around our office is just the sort of continued emergence of the young stars of the game, which is funny because the biggest story last month has been a guy who's going to turn 42. But from Spieth and Justin Thomas for sure, and to a lesser extent, Ricky Fowler. There's just this really healthy core of guys who, again, in 10 years, we might be talking about, again, highly premature at this point, but as some of the greats of the game. So that's certainly one of the themes. I mean, I think as we look at the way that the game has evolved, it's one of those things where guys had to kind of find their way in their 20s, and they finally hit their stride in their 30s and maybe even into their 40s, and now that's no longer the case. It looks like a guy can be an impact player on the PGA Tour, a leader, a sort of a guy that other players look up to when they're 24.
Yeah, no, definitely. We've been running a series of stories, Newsmakers of the Year on GolfDigest.com, and not to give away too much, but we've got one coming out later this week about a certain someone that we've already talked about here, and Justin Thomas. And Jaime Diaz does a really good job of breaking down what he means in terms of his performance this year on the PGA Tour and what it means in general about competition on the PGA Tour. And, you know, you've had Justin Thomas and Spieth and all these young guys really stand out and really kind of change the way we look to a certain extent at how early or how young you can be to really excel. Tiger Woods obviously was the impetus for that, but all these guys seem to be saying to themselves, hey, I can break out, I can play well. Why do I have to be 30 years old to really to be the top player on tour? Did you get the sense, Joel, that the young players right now feel like they want to, they're ready to take the mantle and they're ready to lead out here on the PGA Tour?
Oh, without a doubt. I think especially when you see your peers doing it as well. We talked to Ollie Snyder-Johns earlier this year, and you know, usually, not historically I should say, 26 or 27 was still considered young to be emerging on the PGA Tour. Now someone like Brooks Koepka won the U.S. Open. You know, it was a breakout we've expected for a long time, but he's not even necessarily looked at as a young guy anymore mm-hmm. when you know guys like Justin Thomas and Spieth are doing what they're doing at their age. So it really is, it's not you know, another 20-something wins, like, you know, when Xander did the Tour Championship. I think that happened 3 or 4 years ago. We made a really big deal about it. It was almost an afterthought at his age. Yeah. So, yeah, I think, if anything, we're getting a little spoiled of how good these guys are at such a young stage of their career.
Keely, was there something that surprised you this year that became a storyline that you wouldn't have anticipated maybe at the start of the year?
I think that the LPGA dress code became a way
well we all
way
saw
bigger.
That coming
that story just blew up in a way that I really did not anticipate, and maybe it's because like since we're all here more familiar with what the dress code actually is, like the update to it really didn't seem like that big of a deal internally. But I guess for people who aren't familiar with it, to see what the dress code is, like see it in print and see it moving in a direction that a lot of people think was backwards instead of forwards, it was interesting to see like what a hot button topic that became and how quickly.
It's also one of those stories that transcends the game. So people who only pay casual attention to golf probably looked at the game, you know, on three levels. One was, oh, what a Tiger, is he coming back? So that's the first one, which we already referenced. We'll probably talk about more. The other one is this sort of, oh yeah, they're changing the dress code, like what women wear on the LPGA Tour. It's just something that is fodder for a cocktail party conversation. And the third is rule snafus, like you know these seemingly antiquated rules and causing someone a tournament for something so innocuous. So again, it's like that's a story when you're talking about the rules thing that people, even though if they don't follow the LPGA or even golf that closely, can understand that that's sort of an interesting sort of subplot.
We talk about newsmakers sometimes, and you mentioned Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods was a different kind of newsmaker again this year. I mean, he's always a newsmaker. It depends how you define it, obviously, but he's always in the news no matter what he does. But this year, it was such a high and low and up and down thing. You know, Joel, do you get a sense that people are tired of Tiger or not tired of Tiger or just want to see him do well on the course? Or I'm curious if you feel like there was any Tiger fatigue and are we over it actually because maybe he did so well at the Hero that suddenly we're all back on the Tiger bandwagon?
I don't think there's a fatigue. I think there was a little bit of an aversion to non-golf Tiger stories. I think we saw that after the DUI arrest. I think you know, there was definitely interest that you can – our numbers clearly showed that when you know, anytime we would do a story on Tiger – the fans reacted. That being said, I think people just want to get back to Tiger on the golf course. The extracurricular activities, I think, were really starting to wane on people. Even his lead up to the Hero World Challenge, though, even like the little videos he would post, things that seemed innocuous, people finally ate it up because it was, again, related to the game. So given all the things that are in his tapestry since Thanksgiving 2009, I think people are really just excited to see him back inside the ropes again.
I would say, yeah, I was just going to say that I would say there would be Tiger fatigue if we continue down the road that we seem to be headed down in, you know, March, April, May, into the summer. If he was not playing and, you know, even had little flashes of talking about a comeback, but what happened over the last month was such a reversal from what we thought was going to happen, at least in terms of where we were 6 months ago, that it's hard to say you're fatigued by it, because it's such a plot twist. You know, he looks like he can play golf again. It looks like he's healthy again. A lot can change in with one swing, and he might be back to where he was. But right now, there's a lot of excitement that is, I feel, justified because of how good his golf swing looked at the Hero.
Was there a big story that what's the biggest story that got the least amount of attention this year? What's something that maybe went under the radar that in hindsight maybe it was we should have made a bigger deal out of it? And I would have said actually you know, some of the rules issues in general, because I think it is leading up to this big change in the rules of golf that's coming out in 2019. And you know, obviously a lot of people talked about it in the moment, the Lexi Thompson moment, most particularly this year. But I think it almost became – it came to a head, actually. The Lexi Thompson thing made it come to a head so much more this year that's a bigger deal than we anticipated, and it's going to be a bigger deal down the road. Anyway, long way to get to the question of what's the biggest story that got underplayed this year? Keely, what do you think?
For me, I think it was Shan-Chan Feng rising up to number one in the world rankings, becoming the first Chinese golfer, man or woman, to hold the number one spot. And I thought that was such an amazing moment, just looking at China as a country and the relationship that China has with golf and how tumultuous that has been. You know, golf has obviously not always been a sport that was smiled upon in China, and to have the best golfer in the world, female golfer in the world, be Chinese, I think that says a lot about golf as a global sport. And I think it kind of shows like what the Olympics can do for a sport like golf.
Interesting. No, I think the parity in and of itself on the LPGA Tour, in terms of what, there's five different people that became number one, or four different number one players this year. In and of itself, I mean, it speaks to maybe a change in how we're looking at the sport there, from the standpoint of it used to just be one dominant player who we would ride, you know, Annika Stornstam or Lorena Ochoa or whomever. And
for a while, it even looked like we were going on like a Lydia Ko streak,
yeah, exactly.
And it's going to be a decade of Ko, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's a ton of players that have been taking over that top spot.
Sam, how about you? A big story that we maybe didn't appreciate as much this year.
Well, I think, you know, whenever we have these kind of discussions about overlooked stories, it ends up being the LPGA Tour or the Champions Tour or amateur golf.
Bernhard Langer. We'll just put in our gratuitous Bernhard Langer. Boy, isn't he a great player.
Well, what I was going to say is the Bernhard Langer's, I mean, dominance at the age that he is amazing. And that's one part of it. The other part of it is still the kind of lingering questions about how he plays. And again, I'm not here to cast doubt on it, but it's something that, you know, someone who is really in the game, it continues to be a discussion. So let's put it this way. If Bernhard Langer was dominating the PGA Tour the way he has been the Champions Tour, playing as well as he has, with what is at least to be considered a questionable putting stroke by the rules, you know, it would be a much bigger story. So by that measure, you know, I would say very overlooked within the game. You know, for me, I guess beyond that, I would, you know, everything kind of tends to get caught up in the shadow of Tiger Woods. Again, I go back to this idea, to those paying attention to the game, there were so many great storylines. And then I always feel like guys like Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, whomever else, they all get, you know, lost as soon as Tiger comes back.
Fair point. No, definitely. Joel, you have a candidate for this?
The one that really, and it didn't really hit me until we were reviewing the year, is Muirfield really switching stance and allowing women into the club. That's something. Now, granted, it was against the the fact that the RNA took away the Open. You know, let's be honest, it was a pretty direct correlation of the vote. But the, you know, golf has a bad and unfortunately earned reputation of being a very exclusive sport. And if you can get one of these deeply entrenched institutions of the game to really reverse their stance, I think it gives hope that, you know what, as antiquated as the game can be at times, there is hope that we are kind of going to a more, you know, inclusive game.
Okay, so we talked about stories that didn't maybe get enough attention. How about stories that are overrated? Was there something that we Maybe even we at Golf Digest were guilty of promoting a lot.
We know that's that never happens.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Always pitch perfect with our choice of coverage. Like I resent that idea.
In the few moments when we might not be, what might have stood out for anyone in terms of a story that you know probably got a lot more sensationalized hype than was deserving?
I think maybe it's just because you just said it, but Longer's putting stroke. I just like I am so tired of that. And it's
wait, we can't
not...
say you're tired of it and saying it's overlooked. It's gotta be one or the other.
Well,
but
no,
go ahead. It
no,
depends on
I'm
your perspective.
You're the one who said it was overlooked.
Right. Yeah.
I agree with Longer as a player being overlooked and like his season was unbelievable. That was overlooked. But people talked about that putting stroke way too much. Like, I was so sick of it. Like, you couldn't watch a Champions Tour event without someone talking about it. And it's just like, it wasn't that big of a deal to me. Like, I don't think he's cheating. Like, why couldn't we just make that determination and then move on from
it? Kind of did. The OSJ did exonerate him. So.
Right. And then everyone kept talking about it still. Hated it. Done.
For me, it died down at the end of June when he won the Trailers Championship. But there was a while in May when Jordan Spieth was... what's going on with him? Is he overrated? You know, he had the putter switch down in Texas, and after what happened in 2016 and the fact that he was right there on Sunday this year at the Masters as well and kind of faltered, didn't help that, you know, Justin Thomas was starting to really make those gains after a really strong winter. People were wondering, have we seen the best of Spieth? And then he goes up and wins Hartford and wins the Open Championship. So that's something that, in a sense, you know, it's hard. If you can, they're still there. There's these takes of has Justin Thomas surpassed Jordan Spieth, and now all of a sudden he's only one away from the Grand Slam.
Let me ask you a loaded question, and I don't really have an answer for this, which is that the coverage of our president and his relationship to golf overplayed, underplayed. I mean, we all have biases, both pro golf and then political biases. So, I mean, there's a lot to factor into that question.
I think it was probably overplayed a little bit. From the standpoint of, I mean, everybody knows that he was involved in golf, and everyone used golf as a metaphor to take a shot at him. And it, you know, they can do that in a variety of different ways, but I think every golf story that was related to the president seemed to try to take him to task in some way, shape, or form, deservedly so in a lot of instances. But I think it was overused. I think that the vehicle was overused. Even him being at the U.S. Women's Open, like you said, it was this whole point of contention to a certain extent of the reaction to people and how he was making himself, take over the stage, if you will, and I thought he did. I thought his place there was a little bit too much, but at the same time, I do wonder if that was just another way for whomever to try to take a shot at him. I don't know.
I think definitely like the way that it was kind of turned into like, you know, how can these women compete at a course, you know, after he has allegedly been, you know, accused of certain things against females. I think that was way overdone because it overshadowed the event, you know, and it started to take away from something that, you know, from athletics, which was the point of the Women's U.S. Open.
I guess the part, to answer my own question, the part that I would take issue with is this notion, and it was equally as true with President Obama, which is that somehow playing golf, pursuing golf, comes at the expense of your productivity or these, you know, your attention to your job, because it's as if the 4 hours you're spending on the golf course are the 4 hours that you are not, you know, tending to the solving the world's problem. It doesn't work quite that way. So golf is an easy excuse. I will say that
I think that from that standpoint, the reason that was such a big deal for him, for Trump, is the fact that all he did during the campaign was say he wasn't going to be playing golf, and the hypocrisy that he's had.
My point is, it's a flawed premise from the start on both sides. So that's the point. Again, I'm coming from a strictly pro golf perspective, but you could say the same thing if he, mountain bike, like, and it doesn't matter. I mean, every person is entitled to some type of mind clearing activity. It just happens to be golf, which has all kinds of connotations to people who don't really know the game well.
Joel, you brought up Jordan Spieth and perhaps the storyline of you know, had he lost something off his fastball, if you will. There was a lull there. There was even that with Justin Thomas at one point. here. You know, he started so strong. He won at Kapalua. He won Sony with the 59. And then there was actually a lull before he started playing well again in the summer. Do you think these guys it speaks to a different thing in terms of do you think that our coverage of these players is almost too much of a what have you done for me lately kind of thing? And do the players themselves, you know, I'm not sure exactly what I'm trying to ask from that standpoint, but just is there too much of a what have we done for me lately kind of a mentality on the way we cover these guys?
I think so, and I think the two cases that illustrate that are Rory McIlroy and Dustin Johnson. Rory McIlroy at the end of 2016, this was 2017 supposed to be the year of Rory after finishing strong in the FedEx Cup and having that dazzling performance at Hazeltine. Rory gets hurt, really didn't have that bad of a year, but because he didn't win, we consider this a failure. Now, Grant, when you get to that certain stature of the game, you're only really judged by how you do in four tournaments. But the fact that he didn't win a major, people are saying, where's Rory? What's his problem? What's his future look like? When really, you know, he was there at Birkdale, and then you can kind of tell at PGA he was really hurting. So with some time off, it'll be interesting to see how it comes back. But the fact that he just didn't win a major doesn't mean he's necessarily done. And as with Dustin Johnson, he won four times this year, but because of that great start and the unfortunate injury at Augusta, we look at 2017 is a missed chance, and there certainly is merit to that. But at the same time, it's at Northern Trust after he beat Jordan Spieth in the playoffs, someone even asked him, well, does this feel, you know, what's it feel like to, you know, get this one after kind of the rough year you've had? And you could just tell Justin had a really hard time computing that. And it was just, I think we do hold these guys, you know, we're a little too harsh on them.
Jason Day would be the other one from this year, I think, too.
Actually, I think from his standpoint, it was a better year because, he had disappeared for parts of, the end of 2016 and the start of 2017. So the fact that he showed some life at the end of the year made it surprising. I would say that obviously everything has been colored by the precedent that Tiger Woods had set, which is that when you are the dominant player of your sport, that means that you are supposed to win or be in contention in multiple majors a season, win five times a year, and anything short of that, if you're the dominant player, as Rory is supposed to be, or the greatest talent, is considered a failure. So that's why people might argue that DJ's season was a disappointment. That's why Rory's season would be considered a disappointment. Again, both have valid excuses based around injuries, but that's the reasoning, because our expectations have shifted. You know, in 1994, when Nick Price won two majors, right? Yep. I remember, like, that was amazing. It was the most amazing thing in the world. The guy could win two majors in a season. And it's happened how many times since? You know, it's now not out of the question. So it's just the way the world is now. And of course, the easy excuse is that the money is so good for these guys that it's much easier for Rory and DJ to be satisfied with seasons like this one, because they still won a ridiculous amount of money in years in which they still fell short of their, you know, supposed potential.
Was there a feel-good story of 2017 that you'll walk away with from this year's season, Keeley?
Feel-good story. I mean, it has to be Stacey Lewis, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
That's a great one. No, talk a little bit more about that. Could you wrote for that in our newsmaker?
I can't just say Stacey Lewis and just walk off. No. So Stacey, first of all, had not won in over 3 years, and then goes into the Portland tournament pledging whatever winnings she does achieve in that event to be donated to hurricane relief, because she's from Houston. And
Hurricane Harvey here, obviously, we were talking about in the devastation that happened to the city there.
Yeah, and so miraculously, you know, it comes down to the final hole, and, you know, she makes par out of the fairway bunker. And it was just such an amazing moment because, of course, so much money was donated, and her title sponsor matched her donation. So it ended up being close to $500,000 being donated. But it was also just so powerful to see all of these things come together at once for her, you know, and like she is such a, you know, determined, focused, sometimes stoic athlete. And to just like see her break down and cry, like her husband showed up and surprised her on the final green and just like ran out and hugged her. And it was just like it was one of those moments that's just like, this is why sports are good. You know, this is why we love this so much.
Sam, what do you think?
Well, I don't think we've talked about the Masters champion. I mean, I wouldn't put it on the level of what Stacey Lewis did, which had a huge impact on a much larger number of people. So, but I will say that here's a guy who was at one point considered a can't-miss star, was definitely going to win multiple majors, and goes through a career where he became sort of a serial underperformer and couldn't get it done, and had this reputation for being petulant and immature, and you know, in a very resilient performance, wins the Masters. You know, at a place that was this place that he supposedly hated, that couldn't, you know, didn't think was fair,
and he was resigned almost to his fate, I think, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to do all that and win the Masters, you know, I think in any other year, that's again like what we started with about how in any other year that would be the defining story of the year, and it was a big deal. And you know, we have a story also as part of the Newsmakers talking about how he kind of found a, you know, better peace of mind on and off the course. The two are probably related, and you know, that's a feel good story, which also shows for a lot of guys who, you know, can't get it done, you know, at age 25, 20, or 30, whatever, they can eventually get it done.
Long career, you know.
One guy not to the same scale as Lewis and Sergio was Patrick Cantlay, after going through the things he's gone through the past couple of years to regain that viability on tour, and then actually, not technically, it was 2018 season, but then to win the Shriners this fall. I think it really shows this guy, you know, he's only 25 years old, so has a very promising future ahead.
You know, for me, it seems it's going to sound a little hokey, but mine was actually Justin Thomas winning the PGA Championship and being there with his dad. And you know, I've got to cover Justin a little bit when he was an amateur and when he was even in his junior days. And the relationship he's got with his father, who's a PGA professional, and his grandfather, who's also a PGA professional. And, you know, to see him come through and win the major championship and get his first major, how big a deal it was for that whole family. Because, you know, this is the life they've lived, if you will. They've, you know, lived golf. They've loved golf. And Justin was the guy that was able to make it and make it out there and play professionally and to, you know, succeed and to win a major championship and to kind of be the not even the end point, so to speak, but the climax of a long family history with this sport. I mean, to me, that tugs at me a little bit. You know, it's the kind of thing where I was very happy for that family when you saw them walk off at Quail Hollow. So. Well, anyways, one other, you know, crystal balling for 2018. What are you most looking forward to in the new year? Who might be our Newsmaker of the Year in 2018? Joel, let's start with you.
Well, it's got to start with Tiger Woods, right? It's, you know, especially the way he played at the Hero, not necessarily the scores he shot, but the way he looked, not only his swing, but just, you know, the way he was walking around. He seemed pain-free. It seems like, well, he's going to come back here shortly in January, and if he can, you know, avoid what happened last go-around and just stay viable and play in the Masters this year, I mean, no matter how he does, he still moves the needle. Tiger's my guy.
I'm looking forward to watching Lexi this season. Obviously, she had some huge setbacks with the ruling and then also the short putt missed at the Tour Championship. And, I mean, if you can somehow disassociate her season from those unfortunate events, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And she's just a force. Like, you can just tell she just walks into every tournament being like, I can win this tournament. And I really think that she can. So I think with getting all the bad stuff behind her, I think that 2018 could really, like, be a dominant season for her.
Sam?
I guess a couple of things. I think we're looking at a story about the PGA Tour's TV contract and what happens with sort of the future of golf coverage on TV, because it's an interesting time for all of sports coverage in terms of how it's covered, especially more and more people are not viewing media in the traditional way. And so that would be an interesting sort of telltale moment if something is resolved in that regard. Obviously, Ryder Cup, it's Ryder Cup year, so I'm excited to see what happens there.
You've stolen my thunder. That was
sorry. Okay, I will just say I'm looking forward to the Ryder Cup, but not as much as someone else. So Ryan, take it away.
No, to me, definitely the Ryder Cup. You know, I'm curious about Shinnecock Hills and how it's going to play for the U.S. Open, given what happened in 2004. But after what happened at the President's Cup for the U.S. team, I'm really excited to see what's going to go on at the Ryder Cup. because I think, again, to tout our newsmaker package, we had an interesting story about the emergence of American team golf and what's gone on over the course of the last few years after Glen Eagles. And, you know, the U.S. has not won the Ryder Cup on foreign soil in 25 years. So this is going to be a real big showdown, so to speak. And I think if the Ryder Cup hasn't already become a certain level of golf that we haven't really seen in individual stroke play competition, it's going to get even that much more so this next year. So I'm looking forward to that a lot. So, well, everyone, thanks for joining us and recapping 2017. We can only hope 2018 will be as exciting. And thank you all for joining us on another edition of the Golf Digest podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us if you can. Until next year, thanks for listening.